What is going on, everybody? My name is Larry Francis, and you know me better on Instagram as A Wrestling Historian. I want to give you some background before we get started. I became a fan of professional wrestling back in 1987. I was 5 years old at the time. It was WrestleMania 3, and the moment that Hulk Hogan body slammed Andre the Giant, I was hooked. And ever since then, you know, I've tried to keep up on the WWE product. I watched some WCW and ECW and TNA. But I was mainly a WWF fan. Now, how I became a historian is just one day I went to a live event. I overheard a little boy ask his father who Hulk Hogan was, and that kind of freaked me out. So I thought to myself I'd get on social media and just start a historical account just detailing what happened on a daily basis. And if you were to tell me that 3 years ago I would get a large following, I would have thought you were crazy. But it's paid off, and I appreciate support from the fans who care about history. Now, my first venture into podcasting was in 2015. I was in San Jose for WrestleMania 31 weekend, and it was around this time that Vince Russo had his website go down. He had a falling out with the guy who ran the website for whatever reason, and I felt bad for him that he pretty much lost everything and had to start over. So I met him at a viewing party, and I told him afterwards, you know, hey, sorry what happened to you. If there's anything I could do for you, let me know. He's like, yeah, sure, here's my email. And I kind of became friends with Vince Russo, and I ended up becoming his talent coordinator, just trying to get guests on his podcast interview to get him back to where he was when he had Pyro and Ballyhoo. I did that for about a year until he lost interest in having guests on the show. Then I started my own podcast with Jimmy Noonan. He was the former head of WWE Security. He was the guy that looked like Stone Cold. We did about 10 episodes. I enjoyed it until it became more about he than we. Then we went our separate ways, creative differences and all that. Then I became the talent coordinator for Robbie E from TNA. He started Why It Ended, and I really loved the concept of his podcast, just to talk to wrestlers you haven't heard from for a while, just to go over their careers. So I helped them with that until he got signed by WWE. I also helped the big guy Ryback get guests on his podcast. And then here I am doing my own, because I figure, you know, things just don't seem to work out. So I'm just going to do it my way. I'm pretty much going to continue what we did on Why It Ended and try to get more superstars, other people who are connected to this business that we love so much. Full credit goes to Matt Kuhn for coming up with the name of the show. So I appreciate you checking out To Be Determined. We'll be right back with our first guest, Rob Pitillo, who you may know as China's best friend. Break it down.
You can tell me what to do. You know who you're talking to.
Let's get into the business.
Great. How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I mean, it's my day off from everything that I throw myself into, I guess, on a daily basis. So I'm just chilling in scenic Pasadena, you know, crazy parrots and they're wild, and they're roaming our streets in packs, and I'm just chilling out at the house. I am located right next to the Rose Bowl.
Thank you for being my first guest on To Be Determined. I think we got a great show for all the listeners today.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we had a magical first encounter at the WWE Hall of Fame weekend, so let's continue.
Wonderful. So a lot of people aren't familiar with who you are. Could you give them a brief summary of your life and how you got to this point?
I'll try. I mean, I'll get to the meat of the order, but basically I was a filmmaker, comedian up in Boston. I loved wrestlers, and I found China over in Japan, and man, I loved her legacy. I loved her. I thought she was an amazing lady, and I wanted to work with her, so I negotiated with her manager at the time, getting a director to film her story, and I kind of talked them into a cross-country road trip, and that led to me becoming pretty much a best friend for her. Definitely on the wrestling side, I was the only knowledgeable person in the van going cross-country, and you know, it just turned into a real magical friendship. That's the simplest way I could put, you know, my story. It's complicated. I mean, I've been on the Patriots radio station in Boston screaming at people. I toured Warped Tour. I've done protests as a comedy singer. I've been on ABC's The Gong Show. I'm a creative type, but yeah, I mean, it led me to a wonderful friendship with China, who I consider to be very talented creative type too.
I saw that post you made on Instagram where you reminded me that you were Robbie Roadsteamer.
Yeah. In Boston, I basically played this character called Robbie Roadsteamer, and it was like fronting a metal band and doing comedy clubs, basically playing like a heel archetype from the late 90s. Like, yeah, this is Robbie Roadsteamer. This song's called I Put a Baby in You. Take the condom off. And was like a real obnoxious shock character, but not really if you're a masshole and you're from New England. I mean, it's like, yeah, dude, this guy's going to have a good show tonight. And I parlayed that into like a 4-year career on WBCN, the Rock of Boston Radio, which also happened to be the home of the New England Patriots. So it was a perfect place to sort of do that. And that's how I got my chops in Boston. I developed that. And I met a lot of really talented people in the Boston media industry. And I was able to negotiate getting China back to America by offering her manager, a really talented director who worked for Vice and Ken Burns.
I saw that you did that video with Jimmy Hart. How'd you get the Mouth of the South involved?
Oh, my head. I'm a huge fan of Andy Kaufman, and I've performed for his father, his sister, and his brother Michael at Caroline's in New York. And I've done that twice. They used to have a competition every year, almost like a scholarship program, where they would give out an award to the person who best, I guess, exemplifies Andy Kaufman's spirit. And I'm very passionate, hence creating the character Robbie Roadsteamer, you know, Tony Clifton. But basically, I came in second place, and it kind of lit a fire under my ass. And I'm like, wait, didn't the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, manage Andy Kaufman? And he did. Very early on, when Andy was going around the Memphis territories, you know, pissing everybody off as a brilliant genius heel character, somebody that Jerry the King Lawler, at the time, Wrestling Andy took a lot from afterwards with his heel king character, Hollywood Hulk Hogan took from. And I honestly wanted to just be around somebody from the WWE. I worship wrestling, and my father started taking me in like 1988 to the Boston Garden. I've seen Hogan versus Rick Rude, the British Bulldogs versus the Conquistadors, and Jimmy Hart was a large part of that. Watching the Honky Tonk Man defend his Intercontinental title and winning for 2 years with Jimmy Hart by the ring playing this evil heel manager, and he wrote half the songs for the wrestlers. You know, everybody from Shawn Michaels' Sexy Boy, Million Dollar Man's theme. And it was just something. When we got him up here, it was just to introduce my comedy metal band, Robbie Road Steamer, and to do some comedy videos with me. And when I finally got him alone in the car, I totally, like, geek-boyed out on him. I'm just like, oh, my God, the Mouse of the South, Jimmy Hart, I love you so much. Like, when you were managing the Honky Tonk Man, you were Sexy Boy, and he's just, like, there trying to be calm as a cucumber, being like, all right, Robbie, all right, baby, we got a whole day, baby. We got a whole day, Robbie, don't we? All right. And, you know, that day single-handedly brought me back into wrestling. It reminded me of the magic and just the feeling that rose inside me when I was, you know, around anything, a part of it. And, yeah, a large part of me trying to find China was, you know, flying Jimmy Hart up to Boston and being able to hang out with him for a couple of hours. I mean, I bumped into him Hall of Fame weekend at the Marriott in the green room, and it was very spiritual there because I got to introduce him to China's mother, Jan, which was pretty awesome.
Do you remember what wrestling match it was that got you to become a fan?
It wasn't as much a wrestling match. I know distinctly it was an interview, and it was Mean Gene, and he was interviewing Greg the Hunter Valentine and Brutus the Barber Beefcake when they were the Dream Team. And I mean, I just remember it because I'm a kid flipping through the channels, and this was like a Saturday afternoon WWF Superstars, and I just was like, what is this? Like, what's about to happen? You know, Brutus is all oiled up, his hair slicked, he's got those sunglasses on, and I'm like, what's happening here? And then they showed a match, and I don't remember who they were wrestling, but I just remember, like, oh my God, these guys are crazy. Like, this interview, like, they're going to kill these guys. And I was in immediately after that, and it was more Saturday afternoon wrestling, watching the WWF and Saturday Night Main Event. And then finally, like a year into it, yeah, my dad brought me to the Garden. And I remember just distinctly Hulk Hogan versus Rick Rude for how much my dad was into it. You know, my dad's like a union guy with General Electric. You know, this is his, like, paycheck. And he's living and dying there. When Hogan won, but after the match, Rick Rude, like, beat the crap out of him. And I remember my dad in the silence of the Boston Garden yelling, Hogan! And, yeah, I mean, you know, pack on 20,000 memories after that. Oh, I mean, I was watching during the 80s. I mean, yeah, the Attitude Era pulled me back. I mean, I kind of, you know, was wishy-washy when, like, Lawrence Taylor wrestled Bam Bam Bigelow. And then it was a couple years later that, oh my God, I mean, Stone Cold storyline just completely single-handedly pulled me back into everything. I mean, disgruntled worker going up against his boss, doing a bunch of things that there were no precedent on television for wrestling doing against this corporation, like the first generation of the evil corporation plotline. And I mean, and then everybody in that era, I mean, that was, you know, to me, just absolutely the pinnacle golden era. It's like the 60s to me, you know, the equivalent of the music side.
When was the first time you saw China on WWF television?
The first time I saw her was backing up Triple H. And it wasn't as much as the match. It was when they started to showcase those two on MTV. MTV, So You Want to Be a Wrestler. And they're showing China's life. And what really pulled me into her was when I saw the documentary Beyond the Map. And there's a particular scene where China's with her sister Kathy, and they're hilarious. And they're like, she's holding up like a diamond ring or something, and she's like, and what's our next item on QVC? This is item 32 hashtag ace. And I could just tell by the way she was acting and her mannerisms that she was a total dork. And after that, yeah, I mean, all aside from her doing all these incredible things in wrestling, I I mean, it was her personality on Beyond the Mat that really pulled me in. I mean, I love that movie because it gave you so many Beyond the Looking Glass profiles of all those people.
We're not going to do it now, but the next time I have you on the show, would you be interested in doing a career retrospective on China?
Yeah. I mean, I got pretty passionate about that just because after she passed, I took over her social nets, and, you know, at that point, I became like an ESPN anchor for knowing that stuff. So, absolutely.
Now I'm going to tell the story about how I met China. I already told this on Instagram, but I'm going to tell it for all the new listeners out there. In about 2008, she was doing a signing over at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. I just got off work, and I went over there, but I actually missed her by a couple of minutes. I was pretty bummed about that. So as I was on my way back to the parking garage to get back to my car, I saw what I thought was her going out like this secret passage in the shopping area I didn't know about. So I dowered out the same door, and I'm like, excuse me, China. She turned around wearing sunglasses, and you know what? It actually was her. I was like, oh, wow. So I just asked her for a picture, and, you know, she obliged. She was nice. I wanted to talk to her some more, but I could tell she was in a hurry. So, you know, that was pretty cool. Her manager, I think it was her manager, he joked with me that I had good timing. So fast forward about 2015, she was doing a signing in Los Angeles. I think it was for Gemini Sports. So I went over there, waited about an hour in line. Then when I got to her, you know, she had been going through a lot that time, making headlines and whatnot. So I pretty much cut like this positive promo on her. You know, she appreciated that. She signed my copy of her book. And she ended up following me on Twitter, so that was pretty cool.
Was that at Frankenstein's?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I was shadowing her for the Bret Hart show there. Yeah, I pretty much started off doing, like, you know, the video side, helping producer Doc, becoming her friend. But, you know, geez, during that summer, I became, like, her chaperone at the Comic-Cons and everything. That was a very crazy one, yeah, for her.
So how'd you end up meeting China?
No, I found her in Japan, I guess, you know, weird way of putting it, like, on, you know, Twitter, finding out that she was still over there. I knew she was over there at some point, but when I, after Jimmy Hart, like, doing the stuff with him, when I was looking, I saw that she was blogging over there on YouTube, but I didn't know she was still over there. And it turned out she was. I had to send messages through her Twitter, and I was just basically, hey, do you want to do funny videos? Do you want to be creative together? And I sent her some of Robbie Rhodes' humor, and this was done through her manager. And basically her manager was like, well, she doesn't need to do comedy videos as much as she needs a documentary. And so I quickly brainstormed, and I had the perfect person that could do a pretty compelling doc. And how I met her was orchestrating that, you know, trying to put that together. And I was the first person she saw when she got back to America, and she checked in through JFK and whatnot, and I was at the gates. And that was pretty surreal. I mean, everything at that point was just surreal moment, one after another.
You spent a couple of years watching her on TV playing this larger-than-life character, and then you end up meeting her in person. That had to be pretty surreal for you?
I mean, of course, especially being someone I basically idolize. I don't hold back on that. You know, these folks are gladiators, and I respect them so much. And I kind of got the idea from her blogs in Japan that she was pretty down to earth, and she was. She was like a dork. She was like the alternative college best friend you would just want to hang out with. I couldn't stop having fun with her. We would quote like Casino. She would be Sharon Stone. I'd be De Niro while we would walk through like the casinos in Vegas. And mind you, I had never been to the West Coast. I'd never been to Vegas. All my experience, you know, this is only 3.5 years ago. And where she's going, and it was just, the whole thing was just mind-blowing. It really was. The closest thing I can describe is just being in the movie Almost Famous, but on the wrestling side. And everything was happening so quick. You know, the first day she got back, she did interviews with Opie and Jimmy on Sirius. She had TMZ. And she was already going 180 miles an hour. And she was ready for it. We got, like, I think a total of 4 hours of sleep the first 3-4 days. It was pretty crazy. Yeah.
During that transition period, moving from Japan back to America, she had been talking to Vince Russo, who had gotten involved. Did you get to talk to Russo at all?
No, I mean, because honestly, at the beginning, I mean, I'm nothing. I orchestrated a deal, and it allowed me to be in an SUV with China, but, you know, besides that, you know, really, no, nobody would want to talk to me at that point. I mean, you know, I was a producer, a grip, an intern, you know, somebody on the sidelines. I mean, I loved giving her advice and steering the direction of where we were going with everything. But it was a humbling moment for me to just be around her. But I could totally understand, you know, why people like Vince or anybody, you know, I wasn't talking to any of them. You know, they were talking to Joni, you know.
You had become close with China. How did it get to that point?
Well, just because we understood each other. I mean, she did a lot of her living around Massachusetts. I'm from Massachusetts, and I have a mass whole New England sense of humor. And I mean, that part was pretty easy to get along with her on. You know, I could make her laugh all the time, and she was such a dork. You know, a lot of people that are celebs or people of power, they have just been, they like live behind a wall. They're measuring you up and they're judging you, and you're either a cool kid or you're not. China's just the type of lady, you know, she can go into a convenience store in the middle of India and she'd get along with everybody in that damn place. You know, she was so down to earth. And, you know, before she did wrestling, she's selling beepers around Massachusetts. She worked as a bartender, as a stripper, a dancer. You know, she spoke 4 to 5 languages, played cello. I mean, this woman could be a chameleon. And underneath it all, she's a very down-to-earth, dorky lady. A weirdo. And I don't mean weirdo in a negative connotation. I mean weirdo that I identify with that. You know, I mean, I'm sort of a weirdo. I am a weirdo. And that's what I really loved the most about her was, you know, it didn't matter what was happening. We could easily just quickly get along still, handling things because we were both very down to earth. And to a certain degree, we were happy with anything that we got. You know, she was living out of a backpack at that point when she got back from Japan. And a lot of people had turned their back on her. And it's kind of sad to see that. But, you know, all through that, me and her could, you know, we had quite a relationship.
Is it fair to say that you guys bonded because you had similar personalities?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she reminded me so much of a relative, of a family member, and it was just too easy to bond with her about everything, about what was happening with her, what was happening with me, and we needed that because people were still trying to roll her left and right and use her for a selfie and had all their needs ahead of hers. You know, it just wasn't enjoyable sometimes for her because everybody was take, take, take. And sometimes she just wanted to sit back and just be Joni again, and she couldn't anymore. You know, people would just, you know, even if there was just a couple of people in the room, they usually knew her pretty well, and they would treat her differently. And, yeah, a lot of it was because she was trained in Malden, Massachusetts. I mean, I grew up 20 minutes away from there. I mean, she sold pagers around my hometown, and she discovered wrestling, if you read her book, If They Only Knew, while she was living with her sister Kathy in Tewksbury, Massachusetts, and she saw wrestling on TV one night, and they were both giggling like children, being like, oh my God, you can do that, and yeah, I feel like that's why I identify with a lot of the heel-type characters in the WWE. They're based in Connecticut, you know? I mean, I was on New England Rock and Roll Patriots Radio playing a heel character for like, you know, 4 years pay, you know, doing the comedy clubs, doing the metal scene, you know, like 10, 12 years. They still talk about me on like the Patriot Sports Hub morning show, like Kutcher and Rich. I mean, we went on after them. I mean, I used to headline cruises in the Boston Harbor, you know, with those cats. And I mean, I felt like me and Joni were two peas in the pod.
What'd you think of China's book?
I loved it. I loved it because it shows you how clearly she can read a room, how much perception she had, and how much she had to go through. Those three stepdads, the biological dad, and, you know, I mean, she was abused. I mean, her biological dad fed her sewing needles when he was drunk, blackout drunk, apparently, and he would do this to her. And he one time was so drunk he came home with another woman, and he forgot he was married and had kids.
Wow.
Now, she went through so much even before she touched the squared circle. And, you know, it's like, it plays off like the Janis Joplin or Amy Winehouse of wrestling. It really does. She's this outside character that's blessed with such talent and such drive. And we want that in America to make it to the top. It doesn't always do, but we want it to, you know?
Like you said, she had a tumultuous relationship with her parents. How'd she reconcile with her mother?
Well, basically, she never gets that chance face to face. It's through emails. They had one chance in North Carolina and Charlotte a month before she died to reconcile face to face, but they couldn't pull it together. And so, yeah, I mean, it was through emails and whatnot, and, you know, that weighed heavy on her, because near the end, it was sad. It was sad how alone she was in that apartment in Redondo Beach. You know, I've been there a few times, and it was beautiful, man, but it was quite lonely.
What made her move to Redondo Beach?
The manager. She moved right down the street from the manager. The manager helped her pick out an apartment. He was obsessed with full beach view. Each apartment he went into, he'd look out the window. That's not full beach view. And she ends up literally getting one a block away at a complex called the Delphi on the Esplanade. And, yeah, I mean, you know, she was quite dependent on him, so that made sense.
I didn't know China on a personal level. You know, everything I heard, I can only go by, you know, what I read in the book and interviews and dirt sheet crap. China's falling out with WWE, that took its toll on her. I always got the impression it was hard for her to try to move on because of how she felt about Hunter, that he was the one for her.
Yeah, I mean, she loved wrestling so much, and wrestling loved her. But you know, her story was Shakespearean, what happened in wrestling. It really was. And, you know, she probably thought, I would imagine she thought she would have a much bigger acting career. And that didn't really pan out. Nor did any sort of healing from what happened between her and Hunter and Steph really feasibly happen. Because, yeah, she wasn't perfect, and she was definitely scorned, and she definitely, in moments of great duress, said some stuff that she greatly regretted. And it wasn't her. It was her battling her demons, but that wasn't how she really felt, and it was just heartbreaking to even watch that from a distance when I didn't even know her. You know, it was just heartbreaking, because you just thought, I mean, I thought that it just felt like another Marilyn Monroe, Janis Joplin. Where is this woman's support network? Why is she speaking to the public on YouTube at 3 a.m, completely messed up? You know, there was no filter sometimes. And, you know, that's another thing of her being an outsider, and a large part of being an outsider. You know, she didn't have a support network around her that could help her navigate through these treacherous times in her life.
You were the closest thing she had to that?
I would imagine near the end, because I was the only person who really gave a crap about wrestling that was around her inner circle. You know, that was a big part of trying to get her to come back to her senses, was reminding her of how important she was as a wrestler and her legacy, and she knew that. But she had been so scorned by what had happened relationship-wise. You know, it was hard for her to collect herself to go after that again 110%. And people around her weren't helping with that. People around her were encouraging her to do pornos, do more celeb rehab-style shows, Big Brother UK. And I was really obsessed, almost like being in, like, Back to the Future or Quantum Leap, and trying to just fix that legacy so she could be re-embraced by really the only family that truly made sense to her, the WWE.
Now, during your time with her, because I know she had her little stint in TNA, but did she ever talk to you about wanting to get back in the ring?
Yeah. I mean, she did, but it was tough to do because it was done through the manager's convoluted plan of what he felt like her redemption program was. And, I mean, she loved wrestling, and she had hilarious stories about everybody, and she was very passionate, but it was hard for her to feasibly put together a plan of wanting to get back to the ring, because it had to be done through this manager's reality show style division. Like, originally, he really pretty much based the documentary on the reconstruction of Jake the Snake Roberts, I joke. You know, the resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts, you know, was his doc, and we originally, the manager had the title of China's doc as the reconstruction of China. And the manager, yeah, I mean, basically had this vision of a 365-day comeback program that involved China interacting with all his clients from the Brady Bunch, and I don't know, but it was all supposed to culminate with what he envisioned to be a match in Vegas with Tori Wilson, and all of this, mind you, completely outside of the WWE, which made little to no sense to me. I would be behind the scenes trying to advocate, why are we not trying to get her to steer towards the WWE. At certain points, the WWE had offered rehab to China. This was disclosed through her manager, but they weren't going to tell her yet because he felt she was... It was just insanity. Any channel that China would have had to try to get back into wrestling and try to do that through the WWE was really soiled by people around her that had more interest in making her story a reality TV show still.
Do you think she cracked under pressure because of that?
Of course. This is a fragile woman who near the end turns into Elton John's candle in the wind. She doesn't know who to cling to anymore. And, you know, near the end, she doesn't get a chance to reconnect with her mother in North Carolina. She breaks off from her manager by all accounts a month before she passes. She's alone in that apartment. She's estranged. And she's sending me all these messages and emails as she's sending the director to, and I'm like screaming at him, like, why aren't we doing something over the manager? And that was tough. That was a scary thing to do. Her last voicemail, you can hear, because people released it on their website, she's talking about trying to get rehab through her lawyer, Sam, around the manager, around him. How insane is that? She's like, hey, Eric, I'm thinking about going down to a rehabilitation clinic in Malibu and you know, we don't want the manager, Anthony, to know. And I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, it was really sad because a large part of trying to save China would be dealing with a lot of the elements she had bestowed around her.
It seems to be the recurring theme in Hollywood that somebody needs help, but they're being pulled in different directions by people who are not in their best interests.
Yeah, and you're totally nailing it. I mean, we look at people like Amy Winehouse, and if you watch that documentary, you see all the people pulling her in different directions. Her father's trying to do a documentary while the damn girl's trying to relax on an island. And the talk show hosts are making fun of her, and I'm so glad that the movie captured that, because it seems like when people like Cobain die, everybody becomes angels. Oh, we all wanted Kurt to become better. We all prayed. We all helped. We all hoped. No, he's surrounded by people as much of a mess as he was. And with China, I saw clear as day these titanic elements she was battling around her. Fair-weathered friends, people trying to get a piece of her, people using her every which way but loose. And that's on top of her dealing with her own demons. Depression for not being accepted again. The loneliness and the fear of isolation that, you know, she might have to end up working at like a meat department like Mickey Rourke and The Wrestler.
What hurt me the most is that I wish she knew how much she was loved by the fans.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's no question about it. I mean, especially when you heard, you know, those 13,000 people at the Barclays Center chanting her name and how much they wanted to reaccept her, but how complicated of a relationship it is to even have wrestlers that are a part of the WWE feel comfortable in talking about her influence. I mean, for gosh sakes, it seemed like, you know, the day she got announced for being inducted with DX, you know, Paige comes out and she's talking about how fabulous China is and whatnot. Nikki Cross comes out and says a couple of things. And, you know, this, I feel like a real floodgate of people wanting to talk about her influence, not just in the ring, but the person she was, what she had to break through and become, and, you know, the price she paid because of it. And I feel like, just sort of the same way with Janice and Marilyn and Amy Winehouse, that down the line, you know, over time, people are going to realize the true value of what that woman fought for and the price she paid. And I think that story is going to influence so many people, so many women, so many. It's a story I fight to try to get out there. And it's a story that, it's hard because it's hard to get people's stories out there sometimes. I mean, when Edgar Allan Poe died, this really evil rival took over his estate and started putting out his best of book. And he wrote this really awful, scathing obituary on him. And, man, you got to control your legacy, your estate, because that can get convoluted so quickly. And then if you're not sending the message you want or trying to get the message you feel like people should hear about the person, you know, that's scary. That's really scary. I kind of think it's scary what's happening to China's estate in terms of, gosh, man, I feel like she's the greatest of all time. Three-time Intercontinental Champion, first woman in the Rumble, first woman to advance in the King of the Ring, original member of DX, first woman to best Vince McMahon in the ring, with the arm wrestling, with the corporate Rumble. I mean, this woman was like the Jimi Hendrix of women's wrestling. And the paradigm shift that she caused in her career cannot be forgotten, let alone set aside. I mean, it's up to the WWE's best interest and best for even business for them to shine a true light on this woman's legacy. And if that involves a Montreal Screwjob sort of coming to grips and looking in the mirror at some of the things that happened, well, great, because they did that with the Montreal Screwjob. They sat Shawn down with Brett. They decided to come face-to-face with it. It's so easy for them to do it in the ring, but a lot of times with the politics and everything out of the ring, it takes decades, you know?
I'm sorry about asking you this tough question, but how'd you find out she was no longer around?
It was 4:20. It was like 5:36 in the evening, and I got home, and I got the phone call from the director because the manager didn't want to have him tell me. And the manager's, don't tell him. I'll tell him. And he wasn't going to call me. He ended up calling me at 9 that night, whatever. And, you know, he just told me, hey, she's gone. And I was already feeling weird about the whole situation with them and her. And I kind of got off the phone like, okay. And I grabbed like a pillow and I ran into like my closet. And I just screamed, cried into it for like an hour. I was just, it was paralyzing. It was really paralyzing. It was so much lost. And we only had known each other for 10 months. And it was just so much lost, you know, so quickly in one afternoon. Everything. And that's how I found out.
Now, it was after this difficult time that you wanted to restore China's legacy. How'd you go about doing that?
Well, I mean, Jan LeClay runs the estate. There's no question that she's done a fantastic job of spearheading the light on China's legacy. And a large part of that was her getting control from people that were controlling it. And that, I felt like, was also a concerted effort to alert people to the nature of the, how to put this, the sort of instincts of the people who were running her estate afterwards, the manager and whatnot. And after Jan got control of the estate and I realized that the documentary wasn't going to come to fruition because of the people handling it, I asked her if I could take over the social nets. And I cleaned up the social nets, her Facebook and Twitter, and I started a concerted campaign to get her into the Hall of Fame. No more distractions. We are not going to talk about this treacly shit documentary. We are not going to talk about anything else. This woman deserves to be let home. And I put up a video of her where she pleads for just a meeting for atonement. And she talks about this Hall of Fame's important, but what's more important to her is the relationship with her brothers and sisters that she was in the trenches with in wrestling. And so that's really how I sort of work with the estate, because I work with them. I'm like Robert Duvall's character in The Godfather, like the concierge. I work with the family. And if the family's going forward on something, especially when it's shining a light on Joni's fabulous legacy, I will figure out any means necessary to try to help with that, including this campaign that seeing Jan in the Barclays Center, I was right next to her in the riot squad, and seeing her celebrate when 13,000 people were chanting her daughter's name, and it was okay for her now to bask in her daughter's wonderful legacy and not feel the embarrassment of her being Joni trying to be trolled again and again. It was a beautiful paradigm shift. It really was. I felt it. And, you know, until I die, I'm going to spend my last days making sure we continue to shine a light on this precious legacy so that people can truly finally hear the story, whether it be through talking to you or any means necessary that we move this forward to shine a bigger light on it.
I remember when I heard the news that she was going in, I was just in shock. I was like, wow, they actually did it. And there was a lot of uproar from fans who felt insulted that she didn't get a solo induction, but those fans need to understand that China wouldn't have cared. She just wanted to go in the Hall of Fame any way she could.
For sure. And everything's going to happen. And it's beautiful that the fans are passionate like that. There's no question. It's beautiful because ultimately the WWE universe is formed by these fans, their energies, and where they want the collective consciousness of wrestling to go. And it's so magical that it's finally turned, that you're going to see her, you know, you see her already on the t-shirts again, and that everything coming back is just going to shine a light on a feminist icon, that women that are wrestlers or women of all positions and places can talk about, yeah, this woman went through hell and back, but what she did, so inspiring, you know, in the ring. Because the sports entertainment universe should have no limits. There should be women winning men's belts and women heavyweight champions and intergender matches. I mean, I'm in Southern California. We have places like Bar Wrestling where, man, it's all intergender wrestling. And it has a great sense of humor. And these people are great wrestlers. And the plot lines and stories are so deep because of these intergender relationships. And the fan base is dorks and anime and dreamers and gamers and a wild sort of creative fan base that sees people now that are 5'7 and 110 pounds going in a ring, or someone 5'3 going up against a luchasaurus that's like 6'4, you know, 6'5, and telling a compelling story. It doesn't seem hokey. And I think China sort of was a trailblazer for a lot of that, of what can be possible in a ring and the imagination of it. And by shining a light once again on that story, you shine a light on the future of wrestling.
I know there was a lot of misinformation about the incident at Roddy Piper's funeral when China was able to bury the hatchet with Hunter. I saw that video and I was happy she was able to do that.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, Anthony filmed China going up to Hunter at Rowdy Roddy Piper's funeral, hugging him, and they both do say sorry. And I think it's the last, I know it's the last glimpse of the opportunity that these two had to try to get on the same page. And it wasn't the right time, but and she was pretty desperate. And I mean, now when everything's said and done, it's obvious why. And yeah, I mean, in a way, I'm really glad it happened. In a way, I'm just wishing it happened on better circumstances. And anybody who kind of knows that and just even hears, you know, sort of the folklore behind that, you know, could hear that and understand that on a long enough timeline, things would have been okay. Cooler heads would have prevailed. Time heals all scars. And yeah, it's crazy that you actually saw that video.
How'd the process go with getting China in the WWE Hall of Fame? I know Mick Foley was heavily involved in it.
I think there was, I really can't say on the WWE and, you know, their end, obviously, but I think it was just sort of the collective consciousness, you know? I mean, and we ran a very, very aggressive campaign, and I think a lot of times it's also sort of the way the winds blow. I heard rumors that other people were going to headline this class for the Hall of Fame, and I think it was just a collective of a lot of different things. I know that Sean Waltman was very passionate about Joni getting inducted, and Sean's been a huge part of this because he feels, I feel destroyed by what happened. And if anybody heard his speech during the Hall of Fame ceremony and the way his voice was cracking and emotional, just talking about how there should be a memorial battle royal at WrestleMania named after China, I mean, Triple H's speech, all of their speeches, Shawn Michaels, they love this woman. And there's nothing that's going to make them happier than shining a full light on what she had accomplished. So I don't think it was a campaign. I don't think it was just us, me and Jan, pleading with the WWE. I think it was the universe. And I think just the stars lined up. This seems to be the year of women in wrestling, with them headlining WrestleMania. And, you know, they let in Luna, and they let in Tori, and they let in China to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, there's a lot of magic in the air right now for, you know, the direction and the future of wrestling. But I think if we keep hitching these carts to the women and letting them lead the way, it's not going to be that difficult of an evolution.
Now, did WWE call you or did Jan call you about the Hall of Fame induction?
Oh, Jan called me. I mean, the WWE, I would have met. I'm a guest. I was a guest of Jan. I had the privilege and honor of getting to meet so many amazing people that weekend and conveying to them what, you know, sort of my role was and everything. But it was definitely China's mother, Jan, that asked them to invite me. And then I got a wonderful call from Sue Atchison, who got the Warrior Award this year for basically spearheading their Make-A-Wish program. And it was an amazing phone call that they were going to fly me in for 2 nights to go to the Hall of Fame ceremony. I had just watched Paige's movie Fightin' with my family, and she got the call on the movie from NXT and WWE and stuff, and she went bananas, and she was all excited at the plane. And even though this is completely different, it was just, I felt like a kid. I felt like a child getting on that plane. There was so many people I couldn't wait to meet, and it was definitely the greatest day and night of my life.
Right, because I was there as a guest of Stevie Ray, and that's where we met at the WWE Hotel. And I knew who you were to a degree, and you know, there was a lot of story to all this, so I'm like, I have to get you on the podcast, so I'm glad we were able to do it.
Yeah, no, I'm totally appreciative of it. Yeah, we got to meet before, we got to hang out a little bit at dinner, and we got to hang out a little bit afterwards at the after party at the Marriott.
What would you say is your favorite moment of China's career?
The Intercontinental title, because she had to go through all these insane elements to get to that pivotal moment in Cleveland. You know, Jeff Jarrett was holding the title hostage that day because his contract lapsed. She showed up to the arena. She talks about this in her book. And she's on cloud nine. She's getting ready for her moment. And even in that day, it's not known right up until the match. It's all smoke and mirrors up until the match. She doesn't know what's going to happen. And when she finally wins it and she knows that it's real, you can see the look of relief. You know, she's on her knees. They give her the title. She's, like, covered with milk. You know, they made her do this ridiculous housekeeping match so maybe Jeff could save a bit more face, like losing to a woman or something. I don't know, but it was such a ridiculous match to, like, you know, change the title. And I see that as a pivotal moment because, you know, I kind of feel like it's Billie Jean King in tennis, you know, when she's battling the old dude who doesn't think women can beat him in tennis. And, you know, it's pivotal. And it's something that really hasn't happened since. But I'd like to see it. I was hoping that they'd have Nia Jax wrestle Dean Ambrose like it was advertised, but then Mattel was going to pull out, and then the old stereotypes, the old folks came out of the woodwork. Well, this encourages domestic violence when you have intergender matches. Just like movies when there's people battling on each side of the sexes, how that always encourages. You know, if we had that, we wouldn't have all the new Star Wars, because there's a lot of intergender battles with the Sith Lord there, Kylo Ren, and the women. So I don't know why we don't have much more of that in the ring. I watch it in bar wrestling with people like Tessa Blanchard and, oh my God, Taya Valkyrie and Delilah Doom. And it's so convincing and it's so awesome. And I think it's so the future. And I think China was so the spearhead of that. Just like Jimi Hendrix was like 20 to 40 year old with double earrings and a bandana wrapped around his jeans and playing this future of acid wash stoner rock that millions of guitarists try to emulate. I think China's very much in that same mold. You know, first generation titan of her industry, fresh off the conveyor belt. Like she says, you know, I think on her interview with Larry King, China became a household name.
It's funny you bring up that match, because I actually asked her what her favorite match was, and it was that very housekeeping match against Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, we actually, when she was in Cleveland, because that was on our cross-country road trip, we actually went the day of Game 7 of the 2015 NBA Finals, so it was getting ready for, you know, they ended up losing Cleveland, but I took a picture of her in front of the LeBron James mural, and she was walking around, and you could, yeah, it meant a lot to her, and she writes a lot about that particular moment in her book. And it's amazing that that happened, because they will never be able to take away that from her. They took away her third Intercontinental title run, but they can't take away that first one.
You were with her for 10 months. What would you say was your favorite memory or story with her?
There's so many. They really are. I loved her so much. We had so many amazing moments and stuff. And Oh, my head. I'll say two. I mean, I do comedy music, and I had gotten my first gig at the Comedy Store, and she came with me, and she was really excited for me, and I felt like, gosh, I was a nobody, and you know, she's just treating me like $1 million, and she asked if I wanted my picture taken, and I said yes, and I posed in front of a Comedy Store sign, and she took it, and she was so excited. We were like little kids, and that really meant a lot to me. And the other one being when I finally moved into Hollywood, she helped me move in, and it was like it was weird. It was like a parent sending their kids off to college. I knew it was the end of one chapter, and I was right, you know, in hindsight. And yeah, I mean, those two memories, along with a million others, are ingrained into my soul.
Did China ever tell you how she would have felt had she gotten that phone call from WWE that they were going to put her in the Hall of Fame?
Oh, I could just tell that any recognition or anything from them would have had her on cloud nine, but it was so complicated at that point. It was like a relationship between a boy and a girl who had broken up, and neither side still wanted to just completely exclaim how much it would mean, until China was pretty much doing that when she was really desperate and being broken down near the end. You get those real compelling interviews from her where, you know, all cards are on the table. She just is, she's desperate. She never really conveyed what it would mean for that individual phone call. I don't think we ever had a conversation where, you know, we sort of specifically talked about that. I think it more or less, she generally wanted to just be around her family again. I think she just saw the WWE Hall of Fame nomination or induction as the ability to be around everybody again. You have to understand that when she died, it was April of 2015. Her ex-boyfriend Triple H is headlining WrestleMania with Roman Reigns, and you know, she can't even make it down to Dallas that weekend because she's such a mess. She was supposed to be at a Comic-Con WrestleMania weekend, and she can't even get down there. I was with her that weekend when I found out that she didn't go, and she was in her apartment crying and destroyed, and she heard rumors that she would be arrested if she went there, and you know, I think something besides that, anything would have healed a lot of things, but it was both sides, you know. She wasn't really pleading and begging until near the end, and it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking. I know that if it was done all over again, gosh, man, everybody would have done it different.
It was a great honor for me to be there at the WWE Hall of Fame this year, sitting on the floor surrounded by the boys, and hearing that sold-out Barclays Center chanting, "Thank you, China." It got me choked up, and I wish she could have been here in person to feel the love.
She was there. I mean, all the events that weekend with her mother and going around there, she was there. She was there clear as day. There were so many moments that were set up that just seemed to fall into place. The mother wanted to meet Piper's widow, Kitty, and she was right in front of us. And one moment after another, even when the mother went to the bathroom, she bumped into Hulk Hogan and told him, you know, I'm China's mother, and he hugged her and kissed her. It was that weekend had China all over it. She was there everywhere. She was there when Becky held up those two titles. I mean, it was an incredible weekend for me. I had too many adventures. I had moments to last a lifetime, and yeah, we need not worry. China was there.
It's only fitting women main evented WrestleMania when China finally went to the WWE Hall of Fame.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, women are running everything now, and they should, you know. I mean, I hope there's women dual champions. I hope Becky gets 3 belts. I hope we can get the Intercontinental title on her. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, that whole weekend was women, women, women. I mean, I loved it. I mean, it's just meeting Jan. And, geez, at the dinner, I was, like, meeting Georgia Smith and, like, you know, part of the Davey Boy Smith Hart clan. And she's, like, spearheading a campaign to get Davey Boy Smith into the Hall of Fame. And I hope she does. It should continue this sort of tradition of, you know, women, 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 and Sue winning the Warrior Award and all of it, man. It's incredible stuff. It really is, because we're coming from the dark ages of old white men of power wanting heel archetypes from the mid-90s that continue to take the dirty corporate deal and continue heading us into another evil empire. But gosh, man, there should be more women running the show. Just like in the new Star Wars, you know, it's all women now, all the time. You know, none of these Sith Lords have a chance anymore, and the WWE should take note of it. And if the WWE take note of it, then politics should take note of the WWE and let more women spearhead over there, too. You know, they got Trump in the Hall of Fame, and it's no accident. I mean, they love their heel champions. They should have more women running everything. That's, I think, the whole message of this weekend's WrestleMania.
Now, you did touch upon China's return match against Tori. Did she ever tell you any other women she would have liked to work against?
The contemporary ones, absolutely. I mean, it was really funny and stuff, but, you know, a large part, I was talking to her about my favorites, and, like, you know, at the time, oh my God, I just couldn't get over Paige. I love Paige, and China would look at me like, shut the fuck up, Rob. Like, in terms of, you know, I know that she would want to continue to just dominate, so Paige was one. Even though that Ronda Rousey wasn't in at the time, there was so many rumors because she had appeared at WrestleMania in 2015, and China was already thinking about wanting to go one-on-one with her. It's pretty wild, because what happened with Goldberg during that big Universal title run, I know in my heart that China would have emulated on her side. You know, she was only 45, 46, and I know that she would have had one more amazing run that would have reminded people of everything, and it would have been right in the heart of the evolution period, aka when they just created the new pay-per-view and whatnot. It just would have been perfect timing, and now, unfortunately, it's perfect timing for her to go into the Hall of Fame, but, yeah, I mean, I'd keep myself up at night for years if I think about what could have been and everything else, man. I mean, that breaks my heart. That's up there with, damn, what if Jimi Hendrix got out his fourth album? What if Buddy Holly decided to take a bus to the next town? You know, what if JFK decided to put the top on the car? You know, man, you'll drive yourself crazy with that. You know, we mourn that because we mourn the loss of potential.
WWE, they gave Jan China's Hall of Fame ring.
Yes. Yes, they did. I have a couple of that up on my Instagram. I have WWE Weekend, because I had to capture it in any which way I could. It changed my life. I came back to California a monster, but Jan got presented the rings at the Barclays Center, behind that little dining hall where everybody was eating. They had like this big hangar style room where they had a photo shoot with everybody getting their newly minted rings, and it was very surreal. I mean, Honky Tonk Man was in his jumpsuit, Bret Hart's walking around, the New Age Outlaws, and Jan gets her ring, and I capture like the first couple seconds. I put it up on my Twitter, and I put it up on China's Twitter and her Facebook, but you can just see the glow in her eyes. She's on cloud 9, and she deserved it. She really did. For a 72-year-old retiree to come from North Carolina with her 84-year-old husband, Paul, and make the journey up there and and just, oh God, you know, be around all those cameras and all those people and just be so brave, because you want to shine a light on your family's legacy, your daughter's legacy. I love that moment. That you know, that with the crowd chanting, you know, that made it for me. You know, it was like winning the Super Bowl and getting the ring.
Now, where can fans follow you on social media?
For Twitter and for Instagram and Facebook, it's just my name, Rob Pottillo, ROBPOTYLO. On Twitter, it's still Rob Pottillo, but I go under Quiet Cry. If you type my name in, it comes up. If you can type in Quiet Cry, if you can remember anything. And if you want to see a bunch of videos on YouTube, just type in my name and put China after it. We have so many wonderful videos of her behind the scenes, just her making smoothies, which was my fanboy dream, because my favorite videos of her when she was over in Japan was when she was making those damn smoothies, and she was doing it right in the moment in front of the camera, and she'd be like, I'm going to try this one with pumpkin. I don't like the pumpkin in this one. I don't like the smoothie. Oh my God. And like, then I could make smoothies with her, and we could make videos, and yeah, I mean, you find my name on the social nets, you can find me anywhere. And if you want to see a bunch of really cool stuff with China, then just put her name next to mine on the YouTube, and you can see all the stuff I shot of her.
Well, China finally got the validation that she wanted. How do you think the fans should remember her?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think we're already doing that. You know, we're just remembering her as a woman who broke all the walls down, caused a great paradigm shift in wrestling, was, if not the greatest, one of the greatest of all time. And I know this is a statement that's been said a lot lately this year, but she definitely did pave the way for women in wrestling.
Definitely want to get you back on next time to talk about China's career.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, much love. Every time we talk, we always have a great time, and it's in the most surrealist of situations. Like, we've interacted like 4 times, and it's like the first time, you know, is before the induction ceremony, the second time is at dinner, third time is the after party, and this is our 4th time. You know, our interactions are based on magic, my man.
All right, sounds good. I appreciate the interview.
Awesome. I appreciate the love. You have a lovely afternoon.
All right, you too.
Take care.
Bye. In closing, I was lucky enough to meet China a few times, and despite her flaws as a human being, I want everybody to know that she loved you guys, the fans. Don't treat me like a